But since we're in a movie theater, I have this little tradition. This will all make sense, maybe. It's a movie theater. I always think that if I make somebody once feel the same way I felt when I was 15 and a movie was just about to start, then I've lived a happy life, I suppose. So my name is Marcin. I'm a user experience designer and developer at Google. And here I am to talk about a couple of things related to doodles. And hopefully it's going to be interesting. This is the Doodle team. There's quite a few people whose only job 24/7 is actually work on doodles and do all of these illustrations. As you will notice, I'm not part of the team. I actually asked some of the illustrators one day to just, hey, can you draw me a cat? Just, you know, just spend 5 minutes, draw me a cat. And this, a few of them right here, this is a cat I can draw. So. And I'm actually pretty good at drawing cats, if believe it or not. So, so I can't really contribute in any way by drawing, but I help with user experience, I help with JavaScript, I help with all sorts of things like that. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. In case you didn't know, Google Doodle started a long, long time ago in 1998. This used to be Google logo back then. And the first Google Doodle was actually an out-of-office message, right? Larry and Sergey went to Burning Man, which is this kind of hippie festival around California, and they said, you know, if something goes wrong, we're just not there to fix anything. So here's the doodle. We still use doodles exactly for the same thing. That's not true. We do a couple of things with doodles. They kind of evolved slowly, right? They used to be very simple. It used to be our logo, maybe with one or two letters substituted with the graphic, right? But a little bit later, they started getting a little bit more and more complicated. And this is 2009. Just this year, those are really small pieces of art, I like to think of them, right? They more and more adventurous and more daring. And we kind of see the same thing on the interactive side, right? So this is the first interactive doodle ever. It's for Newton. It's very simple. It's, as a matter of fact, let me just show it again in case you missed it. As a matter of fact, one line of JavaScript. it was all optimized by hand by one of the engineers back before we used JavaScript compilers and whatnot. So I eventually actually made a poster for him just because, you know, it's kind of a big deal. Today, doodles run into, you know, tens of thousands of lines of JavaScript just for something that goes online for 24 hours. So, you know, small beginnings. And you know, Pac-Man, which I worked on in 2010, was kind of a watershed for us, and it helped us realize there's actually a lot of opportunities here to do something really amazing with doodles. And one of the more recent ones we did that was also very popular was for Robert Mogg. And you know, we do, as we heard before, we actually do interesting things. We're allowed to play with the Google homepage in some ways that are pretty remarkable, considering this is a very important homepage for us, right? We care a lot about, you know, people being able to search and people, you know, people's browsers not crashing. But we also have a lot of amazing freedom that I'm very thankful for, where we can do things like what you just saw, which is both technologically really challenging, as you can imagine, and, you know, even brand-wise, it's kind of funny, right? You have a zipper on the homepage. So I'm going to talk about a couple of those interesting doodles. But first of all, I'm a little bit of a computer technology history nerd. So there's a lot of influence and a lot of inspiration for me in looking at some of the stories in computer history. So this is from 1977. I don't know how many of you actually either remember it or saw it yourself. This is Atari 2600, or what they called later VCS, or the other way around, first VCS, then 2600. It was the first, one of the first popular consoles that you could plug into your TV and actually do something with, right? Actually play games. And those games were very, very simple, right? The Atari VCS was meant to do things like this. One box meets another box, and there's a box in the middle. And that's it. It was a very simple piece of hardware. And in 77, everything that you could run on VCS looked like this. But by 1982, people built things like this. Only in 5 years. I know it doesn't look like much today. They're all both very, very primitive, right? But look at this. The guy at the bottom, which is Pitfall, right? It's, you know, looks like a guy. There's all sorts of stuff happening, different colors. That's not just boxes of things, right? All of these people in Activision and other companies looked at Atari 7 to the people who created Atari VCS. They would have told them, this is not possible, right? We never meant for Atari to do things like that. And yet, they figured out how to do it. And this kind of reminds me a lot about web. Right? A lot of the things that happen on the web constantly is the same story. If you imagine taking whatever you're working on or whatever other people are working on and bringing it back to Tim Berners-Lee in 1990, he would probably say, get out of here. This is not web, right? This is crazy talk. But, you know, this is all possible today. To show you how primitive Atari VCS was, you probably all know how old CRT monitors work, right? You have this electron beam, and it shoots pixels, you know, one by one, and kind of creates this line. This is, of course, slowed down. Eventually, if you make it faster, you know, you just go pixel by pixel, row by row, and, you know, there's this stream, and eventually, you know, that's how you get the whole thing, right? And you get frame by frame, and, you know, if you make it fast enough, this is how it's drawn, right? And it's every old TV, every old computer monitor worked like this, right? Except Atari VCS didn't have video memory. So you literally had to construct the pixel at the exact right time before handing it to the electron gun, which is quite amazing, right? So you had to be very familiar with the timing. So you see those blank things on the left, a couple of kind of blank black lines? This is where the programmer said, I'm going to sacrifice 2 pixels because I need some CPU instructions instead, right? This is like whenever I feel really bad about like having to do something for IE7 or whatever, I think back to this and say, those guys had really, really horrible time back then, right? They had to like count pixels literally one by one, right? So this is the Atari. There's a couple of books that came out. The one on the left is about Atari VCS. The one on the right came out more recently. It's about Commodore Amiga. I don't know how many of you know this. Really, really great books and really inspiring. So if you're interested in looking kind of at how people hacked those computers before and what we could learn from them, just pick them up. So to just show you one example of a similar hack that we did, we had this doodle for World's Fair, which was this very simple loop, right? You could just see more things if you moused over. And for example, there's some animations here, right here, right? So your task was to kind of explore and find some of those animations, right? But when you look at this, it's actually not very easy to build this in a way that would work everywhere, right? You can't really use Flash, you can't use WebKit CSS masking, border radius to simulate a circle probably would work, but then, you know, some things stick out, like if you have an animated GIF inside. So what we did actually, this is just a collection of 3 rectangles, right? Literally 3 divs with overflow hidden that are moving around, right? There's some animated GIFs in between, and it's all a really nice illusion. And I just told the illustrator, just give me a really thick circle so I can cover, you know, the edge. If I don't do that, then I will have a lot of small rectangles. It will be much, much slower, right? So this was one of the examples of how we kind of hacked this technology into working and how we kind of used something that's ultimately very, very simple, but allowed many people to enjoy it. Except we screw up one thing, right? If you look at this, if you go to the homepage, it's not at all obvious that this is a doodle that's interactive, right? It looks like an image, right? So this was a little bit of a wasted effort for us because we did all of this work on those details, and many people didn't even realize this is something they could play with. So let me show you an example of another doodle that we built that actually, we went into much kind of larger detail about how we could interact with it. So this was Jules Verne doodle, and the original idea was just to have something that's like, you know, 20,000 leagues under the sea, and it looks like a ship and something like that. But then we thought, you know, we could actually make it interactive, because it's Jules Verne, it's all about exploration. What if we make a little doodle that's about exploration, right? So we started working on it. This is the first prototype. You know, cute thing, you can go down, you can see all sorts of creatures. Except again, nobody will ever figure out there's anything happening here, right? It's just a doodle, and it doesn't even move so much if you don't play with it. And you have to use arrow keys, which is very obscure, right? So the second iteration had some sort of a UI, where you could actually, you know, click on those things and move, and it goes left and right now. But it's kind of a little weird UI, right? It's this kind of trying to be period specific, but it doesn't really work so well. So we weren't very happy with it. So eventually what we moved toward was just a joystick, right? Everybody understands the joystick. You can kind of drag it. You could still use keyboard if you want. It does kind of amazing things here. It's very simple. And we did user testing, right? Even though it seems like a very simple thing, so many people go to the Google homepage that it's really sometimes hard to imagine what they could do, right? So that's why we have to support every possible user interface ever. And we did some user testing to make sure people understand it, and lo and behold, they didn't. Even though you had this joystick, many people didn't realize you can do anything with this. And somehow many people inexplicably would try to click on those dials on the left. We had no idea why. That's user testing for you, right? It will tell you something's wrong, but it won't tell you why or how to fix it, right? So eventually what we did, and this is the final UI, was something like this, right? So you see that the lever is pretty big, and it's actually glowing a little bit when you start. And if you don't do anything for a while, it's actually going to go down on its own and kind of tell you, you know, you can actually interact with it. You can, you know, you have arrows, so you can actually click on the arrows, and then, you know, you don't have to hold it, because dragging is actually pretty hard for many people. And if you click on the dials, we just glow the lever in the other side of the screen. Right? It's like a super cheap UI trick. Just, you know, look this way, and you know, you would hope that you could do it everywhere else, but unfortunately that's not that easy. But we could get away with it. And of course what we also did was that we built an accelerometer support, right? So we can, you know, move this thing around. This was pretty new back then, so, and I just disconnected my computer. So that was kind of interesting way to use one of the new technologies, right? But all of these new technologies are great, but of course a lot of people that come and visit Google homepage, they don't have the newest browser, right? So we oftentimes have to look back and think of, you know, what can we do to actually make it work in all the other browsers? And I'm actually a big fan of all the other browsers, right? Like I kind of like IE6. Is it too early to say that? I don't know. As a matter of fact, here's the secret. This whole thing is actually running in IE6, right? I'm totally kidding. It's not. that would be cool. It's actually not running in Chrome either. Sometimes we do that for user testing. We actually recreate the entire browser, the entire UI in HTML, so we have more control over it, right? We can pretend it's slower or add more buttons or whatever. So I don't know, a lot of IE6 fans in the audience. That's pretty cool. So again, going back to Verne, you can see that, you know, the top experience is the best experience, right? It's has CSS transitions and everything. The middle one, it's a little bit more junky on IE6, doesn't have all of the nice things, but it still works, right? And if people come to the doodle, they don't really know how it works on Chrome, right? Only us go and see everything in every browser possible, right? Most people don't do that, they just have one. So it's still a really nice experience for them. And if you don't have a JavaScript or you have a really, really old browser, you still have a gorgeous doodle at the bottom, right? And that's kind of how we try to do all of those things. And then you can sometimes get inspired by some of those challenges you have. So for example, here's, I don't know how many of you saw this, this is a Stanislav Lem doodle that ran about a year ago. And you know, it was this big animation, it was a game that you had robots and you had to interact with all sorts of different things. And it was done in Canvas, right? I started with Canvas because it's nice, it's fast, you get 60 frames per second, and you know. But of course, some browsers don't support Canvas, right? So What I had to do, my page doesn't work. What I had to do was I had to create another version of it using DOM elements, right? It was identical, right? But instead of all of these drawing bitmaps on canvas, I had to put DOM elements, you know, like regular way, use background elements, et cetera, right? So I had these two different paths for two different browsers, right? They were pretty sophisticated. And as a matter of fact, there were four of them, because each one also had a version with spriting and without spriting, right? For development, you don't really want to sprite everything over and over again when the illustrator gives you new files. So we had all of these complicated paths to do all sorts of different things. And that inspired me to do something. Look at this guy, this little bird that's flying around carrying stuff, right? Right now it's a canvas element, right? So you will see that it's flying down, and you know it's clipped by the background, et cetera, et cetera, drops the stuff off. But now we have a level that's shooting, and this bird just flies away, but there's no canvas right here anymore, right? So at some point the bird became a DOM element, right? And completely transparent to people, it became a DOM element, and it sits on a button on a page. And eventually, you know, when the player finishes the game, it's going to rejoin and become the canvas element again, and nobody will know any better, right? But since we had these code paths for both of those things, I could then add just a little bit of code to make it more transparent, to switch between those without anybody noticing, and I could have this really interesting breaking of the fourth wall, right? And many people wouldn't probably even notice, but those who did, it's kind of cool, right? This bird comes out of the game and just sits on a button. Right. When here's another example of something that we did with Vern. You know, I mentioned the accelerometer, which was by then supported in Chrome, Firefox, and in iOS. Right. So we had, and of course, each one had a different way of doing it. So we had all of this code for three different devices, right? And we had to actually figure out ourselves how to go between one and the other, and those kind of values that we have right there was all experimental. And we still had this one moment on one Saturday, we were working with an engineer, Chris, and we both had the same doodle like you see on our computers, exactly the same version of Chrome, exactly the same MacBook Pro, and we both take our computers, lift them up, and go left, and one doodle goes left, and the other doodle goes right. And we have absolutely no idea why, right? And we eventually talk to Chrome people, and as it turns out, some of the MacBooks have a different accelerometer chip. And it was all reverse engineered by Chrome people, and we didn't know. So by doing this doodle, we actually filed a hardware bug in Chrome, which, you know, which was the first time anybody discovered that there's this different accelerometer chip in half of the MacBooks. So that was kind of funny. It gets even worse. This is, I know how many of you remember this, just a couple of months ago we had Olympics, right? And I really, really wanted Olympics to support the Gamepad API, because those are games, right? So why not? It would be kind of cool. Not many people maybe have gamepads, but those who do, that would be kind of funny and maybe inspiring. Maybe, you know, they will get excited about Gamepad API. Here's a rough timeline, though. This is August, right? Our initial plan was to have, you know, some static doodles. This is the, you know, time of Olympics. Some static doodles at the beginning, and then interactive ones at the end of it, right? And the release of Chrome that supported Gamepad API in stable, so for everybody, was just after, right? Just unfortunate timing, right? So we're like, okay, maybe we just release it and put like a dev blog post, but you know, it's gonna work in beta. Most people won't see it, but it's still gonna be cool, right? So we start working on the doodles, and they slowly start coming out. And then, magically, the release date of Chrome gets pushed forward by 2 weeks, right? So suddenly, our doodle that's starting on the 7th is going to have Gamepad API for everybody. And that's crazy. The next 5 days, I was like on it all the time, right? I was like collaborating with the engineer working Chrome. I was like finding all these like weird versions of Firefox that were built with Gamepad API, and they were like, we were talking to people at Mozilla, but we couldn't tell them why we care, right? So we were like, we need your Gamepad API stuff, but like, you know, we'll tell you later. And we were building it all, and we were kind of trying to put it all together. And you know, eventually, on the 7th, and 8th, and 9th, and 10th, we shipped doodles with GamePad API support. The engineer didn't have a heart attack because he was afraid that something's going to blow up. You know, it's a homepage. It's you know, you will find out if something's wrong with something you build if you put it in a doodle, right? And it actually worked pretty great. And, you know, we had this GamePad API support. And you know, I don't know how many people actually use it here with the GamePad. It's not a very popular thing, but it still works. And as a matter of fact, if you actually go to Pacman, we compiled in GamePad support too, if you're so interested. So that was kind of cool that we were essentially allowed to use an API on Google homepage that was 6 days old. That was kind of scary, right? So that was kind of a fun time. And here's some examples. This is, again, the Atari VCS. And how many of you know this game? Actually, it's too old for me even. But this is Yars' Revenge. And the guy who built it wanted to have this like really cool-looking explosion thing going on shield in the middle. But this is Atari VCS. There's not much memory. It's literally bytes, if not, I don't think it's kilobytes. It's like hundreds of bytes of memory. So what he did, he essentially dumped the source code of the game in here. So what you see here is the game itself is really good in reading 6502 assembly. You actually maybe notice some things, right? But it's, again, kind of inspiring that, you know, with those constraints, the person building it could still do something amazing. And I try to do that too. And I try to build things that work even despite the constraints. So this is the doodle that we had for 4th of July a few years back. We actually wanted to do a doodle for Rube Goldberg, but the birthday was 4th of July, so we thought, what if we do a tandem doodle? An overly patriotic Rube Goldberg contraption, right? So here we go. It's a cute little animation, right? Works really well. But now think about it. How would you actually put it on Google homepage in a way that everybody would enjoy it, right? Well, you have a couple of options, right? You can put an animated GIF, but animated GIFs are kind of weird, right? They don't look so good, and you don't really know what's happening with them. You can stop them, you don't know when they load exactly each frame, you know. Sometimes they're slow when they're loading. HTML5 video, Flash video, YouTube. Flash and YouTube, kind of cool, but kind of heavy, and also wouldn't work on iOS. HTML5 video, the reverse, wouldn't work on all browsers. Individual frames, a lot of latency, a lot of bandwidth. CSS3 animations, you could imagine kind of recreating all of this in CSS, right, with transforms and stuff like that. That's not going to work with old browsers either. So we invented our own thing that I called Crashinator. It's a Futurama reference. I don't know how many of you remember this. The way it works, it essentially looks at every frame and compares it to the next one and creates a sprite out of the difference between those frames, right? So you can kind of see how it's being created right here. It's all, by the way, done in JavaScript, which is pretty cool, right? Everything we used to have to do on server, we can now do in JavaScript. So it creates this sprite slowly with, you know, all of the deltas, essentially, between the frames, right? So you can see it, you know, it goes to the end. And now, when you play it, it actually just covers every frame with a new delta, right? So it's this nice little illusion, and actually it's easier to show it this way, right? It just, you know, overlays every new frame on top of the other one, and totally works on every device we want. We have absolute control over everything. It doesn't introduce latency all that much compared to all the other solutions, right? So we have it, and we use it in a couple of doodle scenes, and again, if you don't view source, and some people do, actually, it's pretty cool when they reverse engineered it, you don't know any better because it just looks like a regular animation. And it's kind of really the point oftentimes with what we do, right? Hiding the technology. I'm really, really excited about the fact, and you know, all of you know this, that all of this is possible in JavaScript alone, right? So what I have here is, well, it's not i6, it's Safari. What I have here is Safari. And those, the way I control this presentation is essentially having two websites talking to one another, which kind of blows my mind, right? If you think about it, just websites talking to one another. It's all open web, all JavaScript, even on the server, right? It's Node.js. So then, you know, I have my presentation, right? I have my remote right here with my timer. And, you know, when I tap it, it just sends all of those things, right? So I can swipe it, and I can move slides. It's pretty cool, and it's all JavaScript, right? It's pretty amazing. And there's one thing, though. I was showing you the accelerometer, right? And for those of you familiar with Safari, Safari doesn't actually have built-in accelerometer support. For some reason, it's compiled without it. So the way I'm actually doing it, this Chrome in the background supplying accelerometer data to Safari via WebSockets, which not terribly practical if you think about it, but there's something cool about two browsers working together. I don't know, you know, it's something cool that you can, you know, take all of this and it's fast enough that you can use WebSockets and make it happen, right? I don't think we'll ever have a doodle where we require the user to have two browsers running at the same time, necessarily. But you can think, for example, of a doodle celebrating a remote control for a TV where I'm doing exactly the same thing I'm doing right now, right? That would be kind of cool, and who knows, maybe we're going to do that. And a lot of this feels like hacking, right? A lot of things, those things feel very... Whoa! This is first time that ever happened. All right. Let's see if we can get it back. This is the curse for mentioning IE6. All right. Yeah, it's this cable. All right. All solid state, huh? You like it so much, I can do it again. I don't know. So remember all of these things, right? This is like a little bingo card, and you can obviously make it bigger. It's all of these hacks you all learned how to deal with IE6 and older browsers, right? All of these things you have to do yourself. But of course, today, all of these new technologies is the same story. Except the hacks are not documented anywhere, right? So all of these things, like, you know, the Gamepad API, for example, in Firefox, the buttons are mapped differently. The WebSockets change all the time. The Flexbox model changes all the time. Request animation frame, it's, you know, it wasn't capped in Firefox for a while. It went above 60 frames per second. All of the things you have to know. And it's a little bit sad sometimes, you know, to realize that, like, whatever we do with Doodles, it always feels a little bit dirty, right? It always feels like we're not doing something we're supposed to do. But in some way, I got used to it. And I think, actually, if we were doing something that didn't feel dirty, we would probably already be behind, right? It's kind of an interesting reality for us and kind of, you know, building some things with really cutting-edge APIs. Somebody actually made this this little illustration at Google, right? And I stole it because that's kind of true, right? It's kind of anything goes, right? And of course, the flip side of this is, you know, you have to be ready for things to fail. Whoa. That's weird. Actually, I'm joking. This is what happened. I'm recreating something. Back in May 21st, 2010, there were people who called their tech support saying, my computer is making strange noises. And you're going to laugh because, and I laughed, right? Because it's like, well, just close your Google homepage, right? What's your problem? Here's what happened, though, and it took us a while to figure it out. There used to be a Firefox extension, maybe there still is, called Cool Previews. That Firefox extension loaded Google homepage in the background. And you see where am I going with this. Normally, nobody cares, right? We can handle the traffic of somebody having Google homepage in the background. But on May 21st, for the first time, we had Pac-Man, and it started playing automatically after 10 seconds. So you didn't even have to go to Google homepage, right? So imagine all of these scary stories that you, if you're not familiar with technology, of, you know, robots attacking you or whatever, suddenly your machine is making sounds, and nobody knows why. So during the day, we figured it out. We shipped a little update. If you see in the lower left corner, we added this little toggle so we can mute the sound. And we also removed auto sound unless you actually pressed a key, you know, to interact with Pac-Man. So, which, you know, how do you test for that, right? How to anticipate things like that? And in a way, you don't, right? I didn't really anticipate my computer falling down, I suppose. But in some way, you just have to be ready, right? So we have an amazing infrastructure, amazing engineers who can actually put, you know, something up within minutes. You know, get a hot push ready if something goes wrong, or get the whole doodle down. And we've done this a couple of times where, for example, our doodle was doing something weird with CPU in some combination of browsers and computers, right? Again, we can't really test everything because it really is everything. But also, we were thinking ahead. We actually had the graphics for sound on and off ready because we thought we might actually need them, right? So some of it, we are ready for things to fail. And here's an example from the LemDoodle, right? So every doodle, if you know, you can go and mouse over and look what it's about without having to click and see the query, right? It's not a very well-known thing, and probably most people don't realize it, but it's a kind of cute thing. But of course, I'm a perfectionist, and my LemDoodle is not going to have a goofy yellow tooltip, right? I'm going to have a nicely written, you know, handcrafted tooltip for every language. Except I don't know all the languages, and the illustrator doesn't know all the languages either. And of course, we made a typo, which you can maybe see. This is on the left, the wrong one, on the right one in German. I think it's the last word. And the way I found out about this typo was that I was called by at 3 a.m. San Francisco time by some people in Germany saying, you need to fix the typo because people are getting angry. And it was kind of funny because we had this doodle that was 17,000 lines of code that was doing all sorts of crazy things with the Google homepage, including destroying it, as I will show you in just a second. The only thing we had to change was a German typo at 3 a.m. So that was kind of funny. Why did I care so much about this tooltip looking like it belongs into the universe of the doodle? I liked it. And let me give you a couple more stories and explain. This is another computer from 1982. I know how many of you are familiar with this, ZX Spectrum. Very popular in the UK and some other countries, but we wanted to have a doodle for this computer. And again, it was a joint celebration. It was also St. George's Day in the UK. So we thought, what if you make a St. George's Day doodle that would look kind of like maybe related to this computer, right? And you know, I was chatting with the illustrator, and I'm telling him, you know what, we have to do it right. So the ZX Spectrum actually, again, kind of like Atari, had a very limited graphic capabilities, right? This is 1982. So these are some example screenshots from the computer, and they look kind of nice. But if you start looking more closely, you will see, you know, technically you have 16 colors, which is kind of nice in 1982, except you don't really choose them at random. You only get to choose two colors and only specific combination of colors within each grid of 8x8 pixels. So if you do it like this, you will notice that each one only has two colors, right? So all of these illustrations are pretty ingenious, right? Because the illustrators have to work around this limitation of only being able to choose a combination of two colors in each grid, which, you know, you wouldn't really tell if you didn't know, right? But I'm telling Ryan, who's the lead illustrator on the doodle team, hey, we kind of have to do it right. So I actually built him a validator where he could drag an image and it would analyze it and see whether, you know, it would actually work on ZX Spectrum, right? So here's an example of how it's being used by Ryan. So it's telling him, you know, this is an invalid combination. There's three colors here. Believe it or not, it took us 29 iterations to get it right. And you know, you probably, like, we just had this talk yesterday. It was very inspiring to me. Why did I build this tool instead of like command line or something, right? I like doing things, I like kind of pretending that every project is a little bit more important than it really is. So for example, this presentation had its command line and its console because I'm like, every cool project should have a console, right? We all learned it in Quake, right? So why not? And it's actually kind of useful. It tells me exactly what's happening in between those guys and, you know, what kind of events are happening. As you can imagine, it's kind of hard to do all of these iframes, you know, like make performant or whatever, right? So it's kind of cool. Going back to the ZX Spectrum, these are some examples of the iterations, right? So there's 9 of them. We literally had 29. You see that it started as something very simple, but eventually it evolved into a bona fide ZX Spectrum image, 256 pixels, 192 vertically, you know, all of the rules. And we had it there for the 30th anniversary of ZX Spectrum earlier this year in the UK, right? Which I was really, really proud of. I don't know how many of you know about this thing. This is the Pac-Man kill screen. Pac-Man had a bug, they would crash after 255 levels, right? And Namco people, they just thought nobody would ever go that far. So they didn't check and there was an overflow and it crashed and you can't finish this level. Of course, well, we had kill screen in our Pac-Man, even though why would anybody, you know, ever go there? But some people did. I think people just like incremented the JavaScript variable, right? It's easier these days to cheat than it used to be. But we had it because maybe five people would discover it, but it would be pretty amazing for those who did, right? And I actually replicated a couple of other bugs from Pac-Man on purpose. So I actually had to add this little clause in the bug tracker, say, this bug is actually meant to be there, and I put it there on purpose. For the Lemdoodle, which you saw the robots and whatnot, you know how like on a Mac you have a black cursor, and on a PC you have a white cursor, right? Well, we had our custom cursors, but of course we needed to have them right, so we had two different ones for a Mac, a different one for a PC, right? Just so that people would feel like, you know, we respect their platform. And all of this is happening because I think ultimately all the doodles are not really about any of the technologies that I talked about, right? They're not about, you know, our homepage is not a place for tech demos, right? All of the things that we do are about celebrating things or celebrating people, right? So for example, going again back to the Lemdoodle, I don't know how many of you saw it, but once you start playing with it, it actually expands and, you know, takes over a little bit more of the page than most doodles do. Which, you know, on the surface, that's kind of cool. Which illustrator wouldn't want more room, right? Which designer wouldn't want more room? But we didn't do it because we wanted to have, you know, all of these things. We did it because we wanted it to resemble the illustration in a book, right? From the same author by one of the famous illustrators, right? We wanted people to feel like, oh man, I remember this. I read this 30 years ago, and this doodle is exactly the same thing. Right, so this is the way the doodle ends, and I'm gonna spoil it for you, those who haven't played it. But essentially, the homepage, the entire homepage, not just the doodle, gets destroyed, right? Which is again kind of a cool thing to say. For me, I can put it on my resume that I destroyed the Google homepage, and if only Safari would play it, it would be kind of cool. Well, you have to check it out, but it essentially goes, you know, destroys not only just the doodle, but all of the DOM elements too. And, you know, I kind of wanted to make it look cool, and, you know, my kind of smirky job title is the Michael Bay of doodles, and it was kind of cool to, like, do all of this explosion. But, of course, again, this is all coming from the story by this writer. Right? This is the story that ends by a machine being asked to do something. The machine can only build things for letter N, and somebody asks the machine to do nothing. And it starts destroying the universe. Or maybe we'll actually see it. No. Okay, you have to check it out yourself. So then if we do those things, though, I like believing in all of these details because ultimately I think once you do all of those things, once you make something really polished, really perfect, really great, people stop looking into, you know, complaining about details and just immerse themselves into this, right? So Pac-Man, we could have done a weird-looking Pac-Man clone, kind of like, you know, something that looked like Pac-Man but wouldn't really be great. But we wanted to do it perfect. We wanted to make real Pac-Man version, right? Replicated in JavaScript. So for example, the original Pac-Man was working in a way that it was deterministic. Every time you played it, if you did exactly the same thing, it would do the same thing, which meant you could have patterns. You could beat Pac-Man, and there were books telling you how to beat Pac-Man just by memorizing the things. So of course, we did it in our doodle, and of course, people were coming up with patterns, which was quite amazing. I don't think anybody knew that, you know, we're just doing the same thing as we did 30 years ago. But it just happened. It was kind of amazing because somebody was just focusing on playing Pac-Man instead of like, oh, this doesn't feel right, or this is not how I remember it, right? For the Verne doodle, Jennifer, the illustrator, wanted to put narwhals in. Narwhals are kind of like unicorns underwater, except they actually exist, which was news to me. and apparently to many people, because they started asking all sorts of places, what the hell is this, right? To the point that dictionary.com put narwhal as the word of the day the next day, just to clarify once and for all that those things actually exist and this is the story, which, you know, we didn't really anticipate, right? Sometimes, you know, we get all sorts of interesting feedback, like with the mock doodle that was just really complicated. Some people, you know, we try to make the UI simple, but ultimately it's a complicated device, right? We got some really interesting feedback otherwise from people. Some of it is kind of sad, a little bit troubling. Some people are confused about whatever it is that we do. This is for the lambdoodle, as you can imagine, right? Some feedback is really great, right? This is for the verndoodle. And this makes me really happy, right? This is the HTML and the browser becoming the operating system, as we all know and expect, but in kind of an interesting way. Somebody didn't know they have an accelerometer in their MacBook, and now they do. And this brings us to this little thing. This is going to be annoying, but bear with me. This is somebody, let me just turn it down. This is somebody actually taking our ZX Spectrum doodle, saving it onto a cassette tape, and putting it on an actual ZX Spectrum computer from 1982. So this is loading 6 kilobytes of data. And this is amazing on a couple of different levels, right? First of all, how far we've come in 30 years, right? Look at this, this is still loading, it's pretty crazy. Second of all, somebody actually took their old computer and did something interesting with it. But it was also great because, all right, and this is just the image. Then you would have to wait for the game for like 30 more minutes, right? But it's also amazing because this doodle made somebody do something we didn't even anticipate, right? It inspired somebody to do something creative. And I think we're very happy when that happens. And this is kind of when I look at those machines, you know, this was the first time, this is the Atari and the ZX Spectrum, it's all sorts of other computers and all of them that you remember first time playing. This is the first time where you could, you know, use this computer as a computer and program it or whatever, but it was also the first time you could do something with it, right? You could do your taxes, you could do some calculations, you can be creative, you can, you know, you didn't have to know anything about computers. For the first time, you could start just playing games or doing whatever. And this is kind of the same way I look at doodles, right? For many people, this is going to be just like, oh, it's an illustration, I don't care. For many, they will be interested. They will be like, oh, I wonder what it is, right? What are we celebrating today? They will click on it. They will interact with it. They will maybe learn something. They will be inspired to do things. They will, you know, I don't know. I'd like to believe there's a lot of people who do that. And ultimately, that's what it's about, right? It's not about the technology that powers it. It's not about, you know, showcasing whatever it is that I can now do in CSS or WebGL or whatever. It's still about using this technology in a transparent way to actually, you know, do something that's delightful and something that's new and something that, you know, nobody's ever seen before. And on top of that, my personal thing, which I'm very happy about, my first computer was Atari 800. This is the, you know, if you booted it up, I guess this is what we will show you. And this is amazing to me. This still gives me goosebumps. This is this whole universe that I could explore, that I could put something, that I can create something, right? So my first computer, that's like, without it, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today, right? Just because I had this thing and I didn't have any games, so I had to program my own games in BASIC, right? This was God knows how many years ago, but this is what's happening today, right? For many people, their first introduction to programming or doing some cool things with their computer is going to be this. They're going to right-click on something, they're going to do inspect element, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. And if some people do it because of doodles, because we put this technology there and some people are curious about how it's done, I think that's pretty amazing, and I'm very happy when that happens. And, yeah, on that note, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Come to my lounge. Now, there's no subtlety to you, isn't it? I mean, I showed you my new MacBook and you were jealous and then you have to throw your own away and
yeah.
Oh, it's broken now, I have to have yours.
There's this advertisement when they're like, you know, people want a new phone and they like accidentally destroy their old phone, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that procurement in Google then?
That would be kind of
like,
cool.
Window open, laptop out, window closed. You're a lucky so-and-so, aren't you? I mean, this is far too much fun than anybody should have in their job. And working with these illustrators must be really, really good as well.
No, they're amazing. Like, I honestly in awe of, you know, how great they are and how they can just draw something. How can you even do that? I don't know.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I guess all of us are thinking the same thing. Like, how do you get Google to have five people to do that? What's the return on investment?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question. I don't think we really think about it in that way. I think it's just something we did that was, you know, we have this term where we call it googly. It was just something that we started doing. It was fun. And, of course, you know, if you're being kind of jaded or maybe cynical or maybe just realistic, of course it's great for the brand, right? It's great for, you know, people maybe come to search more. But I don't think anybody on the Doodle team ever thinks like this, right? We just want to do something that's delightful, that's new, that celebrates things or people that we care about.
Well, that's what we want as well, but our managers tell us it has to make money somehow.
Yeah, and so we it's just five people. It's a lot of other people at Google who work on things that make money.
Who bring the money
in. I actually, this is half of my job, right? Half of my job, I'm actually working on Chrome. Maybe that's the karma because I use Safari instead of Chrome. That's why my computer fell down. But yeah.
A lot of questions are reflecting what I asked you a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Can we get the Crushinator and your presentation framework? Is that somewhere on GitHub as well, or Google Code if you need be?
I can. What was that? You know, Penn and Teller, the magicians, and Teller was always like, "Don't show people how the trick is done," except they do that, right? I've always wanted to, and I just never really got the time, I suppose. The funny thing is that Apple recently used something that looked very much like Crushinator on their homepage, which was really fun to see. I don't think it's a new invention; it's just adapted to the new medium. I would say, please send me emails or tweets to inspire me to actually write it up or create some sort of a post. And yeah.
It was really interesting with the, as you said, the iPhone 5 website that came out, because about 20 minutes after it came out, somebody had written a blog post using DevTools to actually analyze what they've been doing and reverse engineering what Apple has done. And I think that kind of exploration is what Doodles do a lot as well.
We do. So the funny thing is, like, somebody actually did the same thing with Crushinator at some point, except they didn't know what it's called, I suppose. But we also open source a couple of Doodles, right? The Lamb Doodle, entire 17,000 lines, is open source somewhere on Google Code. The Mock Doodle and the Turing Doodle, Alan Turing, it's all open source. So we do share. It's just, you know, there's always more that we would like to do and not enough time to do it.
I found fascinating as well, and I hope it's not a marketing thing. I hope it really happened randomly. Was the Les Paul doodle with the guitar when you had like the guitarist of Rage Against the Machine playing on it on YouTube out of a sudden?
Yeah, it's we're very flattered by a lot of the, like, people are actually really happy with a lot of the doodles, and we had the mock doodle, we had the keyboardist from Depeche Mode, recording himself on video. So, yeah, I mean, it's that's what's really amazing about those. That's why what I love working on them, that they're, you know, like, Pac-Man, it's not even technologically all that impressive. There's nothing about HTML5 there, right? It's just div floating around. But, you know, we have a unique opportunity to do something that that a lot of people can enjoy, and a lot of people who maybe otherwise wouldn't care about any of those technologies, right? Wouldn't go on, you know, all of these amazing websites that celebrate HTML5. I feel like it's a little bit of our responsibility to, in addition to do delightful illustrations, all of this, to also just, you know, sneak in a couple of HTML5 or CSS3, whatever we call it these days, just so people get excited about the web. In the same way, I hope that, like, all of my goofy things here with the things are also kind of cool in a way, even though they're not maybe very practical, right? Like chaining two browsers together or, you know, all of those things. But it's an exploration of what the web can do, and it's amazing. It still blows my mind.
It's like every day is hack day for you in this case, and I mean, it's like, what baffles me is that Google allows code like that to be live on their flagship page. I mean, one of the questions was, like, has a doodle ever crashed the main functionality of the search bar, or?
Never happened, no. no, not even once. We did. The thing is that we had a doodle for Calder, which was this rotating mobile thing, and yeah, and we canceled it because 2 hours within we got reports of it consuming too much CPU, and we ran it again next year. We did better job of making sure we have like a lot of these doodles have very complicated heuristics inside to make sure we're not like, you know, hammering CPU when somebody's not looking at them, things like that. So we've gotten much better at this. You know, Pac-Man was a huge, like, we had no idea. Like, I was, like, petrified I'm gonna, like, be fired because, like, I didn't anticipate something and people won't be able to search, right? We've gotten way better at this, but it's always, you know, whenever you try a new API, it's always a big mystery. So we did. We did do weird things with all sorts of browsers and all sorts of situations, and we try to catch them in time, and fortunately it doesn't happen nearly as often as my pessimistic or slash realistic self would believe. Like the Gamepad API, that was pretty frightening, right? It was like the first large-scale deployment of Gamepad API and in the JavaScript flavor of it, and like I somehow became for this 1 week in August like the world's foremost expert on Gamepad API, which I don't really use at work, but it was kind of fun to learn all of this, and that's what's like again there was a couple of mentions yesterday of like why build weird tools that nobody uses, right? What's the point? And in some ways some of the tools are exactly the same way to me, like, you know, we all of this is just pushing the envelope a little bit and learning, you know, all of these like little dark corners of the new technologies. And I think it's always somebody who benefits, even from like the weirdest tool you build or the weirdest exploration, you know. And I love doing that, and I love when other people do that. And some of the people who I'm a big fan of are actually in the audience, so that's pretty cool.
One thing that cracked me up about the Pac-Man doodle was that somebody analyzed how many millions of work hours are wasted in America a day playing the Google the Pac-Man doodle.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Actually, somebody in the tech press contacted me for a quote on this, like, oh, Google does something bad about this, and I just answered, how long does it take to load the average website? And how many man hours are wasted by bad technology? I'd rather see some cool technology, playful use that people have fun with the internet from time to time without being blocked by their company.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, who's to say what's wasted, really?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, for somebody that's going to be, you know, like a throwback to when they played Pac-Man 20, 30 years before for the first time in whatever arcade they were in, that's worth a lot, and you like that's not something you can express in monetary value, right?
Yeah.
Some other people might just be excited about, wow, you can do this without Flash. We got a lot of feedback like this, right? Which, to us, is obvious, right? Well, of course, you can do these things without Flash, except we had to do sound in Flash, but it's a whole different story. But Flash is, you know, like we choose tools that work, that make us, that let us achieve what we want. We don't really like actively hate any given technology or are opposed to it, right? We just cherry pick whatever works. But again, like for many people, like they have no idea HTML can do that. And I think letting people know that those things are now possible, that's worth a lot. It's not wasted time.
Okay.
For other people, it was wasted time.
But we got to stop here because we got a few more speakers.
Okay.
I could cover you, well, I could talk to you about this all evening because I did Commodore 64 stuff as well, so we could go into all details.
I will hate you because I'm the Atari guy, so we don't speak really.
Yeah, get off my stage.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Commodore 64.